In any case, it is a gift by the parents from the standpoint that they are deciding unilaterally that this is what they want to do. And it is not part of a contract unless it is made so at a later date. But it is provided for the same reason that would prompt any other gift from the parents to the child. That they decide, the parents decide, that the relationship between them in the here and now would be enhanced by whatever it is the parents have decided to do, not what it would be later after they are gone and so forth. In the same way, as thinking that the parents have some kind of an obligation, it is very easy to assume the children have some obligation to the parents for what the parents have done in raising them and so forth. You know, when the parent needs something, he goes and hunts up his married children and he reminds them of all the things that he did for the children when he fed them and clothed them and supported them and so forth and said, look at all I did for you for 18 years. Well, this is merely saying, as Marian Landers has pointed out, that the child and the parent have some kind of contract. The only problem is that it was the parent who unilaterally decided the contract, decided that it would even exist and what the terms are and that the child was going to participate. Not only that, the parent is deciding ex post facto how much the child owes to the parent. He didn't say at age 15 to the child that you owe me $10,000 as a result of what I've done for you and I'll collect it as I need it. Rather, when the child is 25 or 30, the parent comes to him and says, you owe me so much for what I have done for you in the past. And the least you can do to pay it back is to provide this benefit for me and so forth. Well, obviously, the child could never fully liquidate such an alleged debt because no matter how much he did for his parent, it would never be enough because there's no standard on which to judge. There's been no value placed on it. Well, this brings us to the question of what is the child's position in the household? How does the parent assume custody? What so-called rights does this bestow upon the parent that would not otherwise be his with regard to the raising of the child and so on? Well, in the first place, during that period of time when you judge that the child is too young to fend for himself, you will assume custody. Only if you prefer the consequences of assuming custody to the consequences of not assuming the custody. But assuming that you then prefer the consequences of assuming the custody, you do so during the period when you judge that the child is too young to fend for himself, meaning that he is not able to manipulate himself physically in such a way that he could even provide for his own survival. And when I say the child is too young, then, I don't mean that he is just too young to make good decisions. But I'm rather talking about that brief period, that very brief period, when he's too young to even survive without someone helping him. And during that period, it seems obvious to me that the woman is the natural custodian of the child. And I'm not saying that she ought to be, or that she should be, or that it is her right to be, or that it is her responsibility to be. But by the fact of life, she is carrying the child. And she can disappear before the child's born, so she has physical custody of the child up until the time the child is born, and of course has the first opportunity to retain physical custody at that time. So she is obviously the natural custodian at the outset. This means that if a man and a woman conceive a child and they are not setting up a household together or in any way married, the child really is completely the woman's responsibility. Because, of course, again, no matter how you say that the woman has a right to something from the man could disappear, and who's going to enforce the right? Of course, this works both ways, to apparent advantages or disadvantages to both of them because of this. It means that, first of all, if the child is a hardship, the woman is going to have to bear the burden of either supporting the child or finding someone else who will raise it. This may or may not involve problems. For the man, it means that he may now never have the opportunity to raise a child, even though he may want to do so, simply because he can never get himself in a position where a child will be made available to him, because there's one thing that a man can't do. I forget what it is right now, but when I remember, I'll bring it up. But all of this is merely a recognition of the natural facts of life in the absence of any agreement between the parties to do otherwise, which, of course, always exists as an alternative. For example, a man and a woman may make an agreement as to what they will do if a child is born as a result of their sexual acts. They may agree that the man will take custody or that he'll be fully responsible to see that someone takes custody or whatever, or that he will pay part of the support or whatever may be the case. They may make any kind of an agreement they want to once they have recognized that in the absence of such an agreement, she is the natural custodian. So how do we want to change that now? How do we want to build on that? A man who is a bachelor could even control